Morning. Today's daf in Bab Metzia is Ayin Ches. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lona Zecher Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We are into the sixth parak of Bab Metzia. We are talking about relationships between an employer and an employee. And we're talking about some basic financial responsibilities that each have to one another. We started the Mishnah. Going back to the very bottom of Ayin Hei Amud Beis, top of Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, and we learned about what happens if one of the two parties were to retract from one another. Under what circumstances is the employer going to be in the driver's seat and the employee is going to, or the employee is going to be in the driver's seat? And seemingly, as we went through the Brice yesterday, the Brice is found on Ayin Vav Amud Beis. So it's a machlok, it's a tanaim, whether or not we view the employer or the employee in the driver's seat. In the event that, let's say, there's a kablanus, there's a certain contractual agreement between the two parties, employer and employee, and halfway through the employment, the employee says, okay, I'm done. The employer looks at him and says, you're not done. You're only halfway through the job. And the employee says, okay, I'm not disputing that. I'm not working anymore. So whatever his excuse is. So under those circumstances, so what leverage does the employer have in such a scenario? So we know the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, that if you're the one who is retracting from the contractual agreement, so you have the lower hand, not the upper hand. And the Braisa brought down a machlok is between the Tanakam and Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa sides with our Mishnah. He says that you're right, that the employee who retracted is going to be in a lower position. An example, as we learned yesterday, would be the following. Let's say halfway through the job, it's a two-seller job, right? 8 dinarim. It's a two-seller job, and halfway through he backs out. So he finished exactly half the job. So now the employer is going to have to find new workers in order to finish the job. And let's say employment went up. So now it costs cost him six in order to finish the job. 6 dinarim to finish the job, not 4. So now it's going to cost him a total of 10 dinarim. When the job had been completed, would have only been 8. So according to Rabbi Dosa, what you're going to do now is you're going to go to the first employees and say, look, you guys could have finished the job, you didn't, you retracted. You are now costing me 2 dinarim. That's not going to be on me, that's going to be on you. I'm going to deduct from your pay 2 dinarim. And so that is the opinion of Rabbi Dosa. Okay, the Tanakhama disagrees, and as far as the halacha is concerned, I believe that's where we're up to now in the Gemara. We're in the very bottom of Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, and we are picking it up now in terms of who do we follow like in terms of halacha. Very bottom. The Gemara starts off, Amar Rav. It's 5 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Halacha k'Rebbi Dosa. So the halacha falls like Rebbi Dosa. Which parenthetically, by the way, we kind of saw that coming. That's the Mishnah. The Mishnah is in agreement with Rebbi Dosa. It's a Stam Mishnah. That's that when you retract, you have the lower hand. So the Gemara says, Umi Amar Rav Hach. The Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. And that is that there's another statement made by Rav, which seems to be inconsistent to what we just learned. And that is, Vamar Rav. Pol Yachol Achzer Bo Afilu Bechatzi Ayon. You know that if you are a worker getting paid by the day, and halfway through the day you decide, you know what, I'm done, so you can. You have the right to quit right in the middle of the day. And you're obviously not going to get paid for the part that you don't work, but you are going to get paid for the part you do work with no penalty whatsoever. Okay, so it seems to be that Rav is providing 2 different positions in terms of who is really going to be, who's going to have the leverage in negotiation. Is it going to be the employer or is it going to be the employee? And the Gemara says that maybe you thought that you can make a very simple distinction between getting paid by the hour versus getting paid by the job. And that is, when you get paid by the hour, so then you are getting paid by the hour, you are able to leave at any point in time that you want with no penalty. And you just simply get paid for the time that you work. And Masha Enkein, if it's kablanos, if it's a contractual agreement, we're getting paid by the job. So maybe then, by you backing out, you are causing a significant inconvenience to the employer, and so therefore you're going to get penalized, like we described a moment ago. And so the Gemara says, so maybe we can make a very simple distinction. But the Gemara says, but I don't, in other words, even though from a Svara standpoint the distinction is excellent, I simply don't think that the distinction is correct. Vatanya, consider the following price. So let's say you hire a worker, and halfway through the day, so something happens which was unforeseeable, and it's an ones. So, for example, he loses a relative, or for example, he gets a fever. So im schirhu. So if he's getting paid by the day, so no sin lo scharo, you give him his schar. And not only do you give him the schar for the part that he worked, you give him the schar even for the part that he didn't work as well. Rashi on the top of the amud, hova anusu ein lakanso laso. You don't pay him for the unpaid leave. You pay him for the part that he works. But still, the point is that you're not going to penalize him for having to back out. He has right now a very legitimate reason why he can't work anymore. It's an ones, and it's something that he could not have controlled. So no silo scharo. So im kablan or no silo kablan also. And if he's a kablan, you pay him that which he accepted to work. So in this statement made by Rav, we see very clearly, it's a brisa, I should say. In the statement made by the brisa, we see very clearly over here that there is no distinction between a schir versus a kablan. In both of those circumstances, you're going to not get penalized. But consider now, the brisa over here is giving what kind of example? Not an example where you volitionally decide on your own that I'm not working anymore, but rather your stoppage of work has to do with something which was unforeseeable. So now money. So let's think about it. Who's the author of this brisa? Elam Rabban Amayir Yeshama Shemeso Meso Shachzaso Chamadanis Kilo Anisnami Ham Rabban Yad Poel Al Hayona. You see, if it's a sheet of the Chachamim who is the author of this brisa, I don't need an excuse of relative died. I have a fever. In other words, you have the right, according to the Chachamim, to back out in the middle with no penalty, and you're going to get paid for the work that you've done. So the Brisa over here doesn't have to give the example if it was authored by the Brisa of Anus. As even on your own, if you volitionally decide to stop, you're not going to get penalized. So Ela Lav Rabbi Dosehi. So you see that the author of the Brisa is Rabbi Dosa, and what did we just learn together? Shmamina lo shanale Rabbi Dosa means schir sekablanus, that there's no difference between schir and kablan. In both of those circumstances, normally you would get penalized, and the Bryce is telling us that if it's an unforeseeable event, you're not going to get penalized. But the important part for us is to realize that the Bryce is talking both about schir and about kablanus, so there is no distinction to be made between the two. So we have now what's called a problem. Because on one hand, Rav says that when it comes to the relationship, the employer is in the driver's seat, the employee, it takes the back seat, meaning apostles like Rav Dosa. On the other hand, Rav also says that a schir yom can back out with no, he doesn't need to present an excuse, can back out in the middle of the day with no penalty. So we are confused by the psak of Rav. We want to make a distinction between schirs and kablanos, but the brisa doesn't allow us to do that, because the Bryce is clearly talking about both. Okay, so we have a problem. So the Gemara gives a couple suggestions. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak B'davar Ava V'Divrei Hakol. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, well, maybe the Bryce could be going like the Chachamim. Now we ask the question, if the Bryce is going like the Chachamim, the Bryce we just read, if the Bryce is going like the Chachamim, why do we need the excuse of Anus? Just simply say, I'm done. I don't want to work anymore. And according to the Chachamim, no penalty. So the Gemara suggests that maybe the Bryce is talking about a case of Davar HaAvod, where it is a time-sensitive manner, like the cases we described back in the Mishnah. An example we gave in the Mishnah is that the flax is soaking in the water. I'm hired somebody to remove the flax from the water. If he doesn't do it, I'm going to lose the flax. This is a time-sensitive issue. So under those circumstances, even the Chachamim are going to tell you that his backing out of the job is going to result in a penalty. Has to result in a penalty, because by him backing out of the job, I lost. So the Gemara says, so under these circumstances, now if he has a good excuse, notably death of a loved one, a fever, now if he has an excuse, a legitimate, honest excuse, so then he's not going to get penalized. That could be what's behind the Braisa. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah. Tan kol ha-mishana yad al ha-tachtona v'chol ha-chozer v'yad al ha-tachtona. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa. I'm sorry. The Gemara quoted our Mishnah. Now, Bishlam kol ha-mishana yad al ha-tachtona v'samlan tanik Rabbi Yehuda. Now, in terms of deviating from the job that you did, right? Like the example that we gave previously, you were told to dye something red, and instead you dyed it black. So there, you deviated from your instruction. So therefore, you're going to have the lower hand. Good, and that's a stop mission that goes like Rav Yehuda, which we learned back in Baba Kama. Fine. However, so the Gemara says, but when the Mishnah says that you retract from your employment agreement, you are going to have the lower hand. What is that coming to tell us? So the Gemara says, so presumably what it's telling us is that a retraction is going to result in a penalty, and even if you're a Poel, and that is presumably going like Rabbi Dosa. It's not going like the Chachamim, because the Chachamim do not feel that a worker should be penalized for backing out early. So presumably the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Dosa. And now, again, where we stand right now is that according to Rabbi Dosa, the worker is going to get penalized, whether he's a Schir Yom, whether he's a Kablan, he's going to get penalized for backing out in the middle of the job. So now, again, we're left wondering how to understand Rav. Rav said that he agrees with Rabbi Dosa, but on the other hand, he also allows the Schir Yom to work out halfway through. But we also know that according to Rabbi Dosa, the penalty would be true for both Kablan and for Schir. So again, we are stuck trying to understand Rav. Ela Rabbi Dosa Tarti Kamar. So the Gemara says, look, as far as Rabbi Dosa is concerned, there is no way out of it. Rabbi Dosa, the Tana, is of the opinion that a penalty will be for the employee, whether he's a Schir Yom, whether he's a Kablan, he backs out in the middle, he's going to get penalized. And Rav Savala Kavasa Bechado Palagala Bechada. And then as far as Rav is concerned, so he half agrees with Rabbi Dosa. If it's a question of a... if it's a question of a kablan, so the contractor who agreed to finish the job and he didn't finish the job, so there Rav agrees with Rabbi Dosa, penalty. If for the employer it's going to cost more to finish the job, that's going to be deducted from the first people who backed out. And in that regard, he agrees with Rabbi Dosa. On the Schir Yom, however, he does not agree with Rabbi Dosa, even though Rabbi Dosa himself agrees that a penalty will be incurred for him backing out in the middle of the day, even though he's a Schir Yom. Rav does not side with that viewpoint of Rabbi Dosa. So there we have it. So one approach that the Gemara has given to us is that Rav half agrees with Rabbi Dosa, and now we can understand that for Rav, a very distinction can be made between Schir Yom versus Kablanus. You get paid by the hour, you were supposed to work the full day, you back out halfway through the day, no penalty. Again, according to Rav. If you're a Kablan, getting paid by the job, and you back out halfway through the job, penalty. Okay. Ibai Sam of the Gemara now quotes another approach, and that is called a Chozer Bo Yad Olach Tachtona. Now, the problem was is that we didn't believe there was such a distinction within Rabbi Dosa because of our Mishnah. The Gemara now makes the argument, there's another way to understand the Mishnah. How else are you going to understand the Mishnah? The Chazara over here is not talking about an employer versus an employee. Chazara over here is talking about a transaction. And Lichidatanya called a Chozer Bo Ketzad, Areshabachar Sadel Chaver Bel Zuz. Venasal Maos Mehen Masayim Zuz. So let's say you buy a property. Property was worth 1,000 zuz. You put 20% down on the property, which is, generally speaking, the going rate nowadays. I mean, you could put down whatever you want as a down payment, but before getting penalized. So So he put 20% down. He put 200 zuz on the property. And bizman shamocher chozer bo yalokech al yona. So if now, let's say, the seller retracts after the down payment is made. Now, a fair question you can ask, which we're going to deal with later, is if you put down a down payment, don't you own it? I mean, what kind of retraction are we talking about now? You put a down payment. So stay tuned. We're going to deal with that question later on. And that is a reasonable question. But for our purposes right now, we're talking about you didn't pay the full amount. You only paid 20%. And there's a retraction. If the seller retracts, so Ratzar Melo Tenli Ma'osai Otenli Karka Kenege Ma'osai. So now the buyer says to the seller, wait 1 second. I gave you 200 zuz. So you're retracting from the deal? So here's our story. You're either going to give me my money back or you're going to give me 20% of the property, because I gave you 200 zuz. And me'echem agbiyo min ha'idus. And by the way, I'm going to collect the best land for representing my 20% share that I purchased on the property. Is there now? What if the buyer retracts after having given 200 zuz down for the property, and he retracts yad mochel la yona? So now the mocher is going to say to the seller is going to say to the buyer, "Ratz amar lo heilach ma'osecha." Either A, here's your money back, or Ratz amar lehecharka keneged ma'osecha. Or the seller could say, "Look, I planned on selling you the property. You gave me 20%, 200 zuz. I'm giving you a share commensurate to your 20 to your 200 zuz, and mechem agbiel menezibos. And because now the seller's in the driver's seat, because the buyer backed out, the seller now is going to give his worst property to the seller, equivalent to 200 zuz. Now, Shimon Gamliel Amar Malam Demoso Shloyachzuru. Rav Shimon Gamliel, this is still a continuation of the Braisa, says, well, here's what we're going to do. You put a down payment down for the property. I'm going to show you how to pay part of the property and acquire the entire property. And that is Ketzad. How do you do that? It's very simple. Kosev lo. What you do is you write in the contract. Ani ploni ben ploni machaki sad ploni slaploni. I so-and-so sold the property, specifying the property that was sold. And be'elav zuz, for the amount of the sale, v'nasali me'em asayim zuz, and of that 1,000 zuz, he paid me 200 of the 1,000. So in the contract, it is clearly articulated that this is a down payment. And what about the rest? The Harini Nosha Bo Chesme Azuz. The rest is a balance. He owes me the remainder. Kana Umachzir Lo Esashar. Afilo Lacher Kamashanim. So now the sale is a finalized sale. It's contracted that this is just simply a down payment. I owe him the remainder, the balance 800 Zuz. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says once all this is put down to the contract, so then the sale is finalized. Neither party can retract because the sale is done. Okay. What have we just learned together? So the reason why we quoted this braisa is just simply, it's another way to understand the Mishnah. And what we gain by doing that is now no longer does the Mishnah talking about employer-employee. And what we gained by that is that now we weren't forced to say that Rabbi Dosa was talking both about a contractor and a Schir Yom. And so therefore we could have understood Rav, both Paskin like Rabbi Dosa, and making a distinction between a contracted worker for the job and a contracted worker by the hour. Okay, that's what we gain by doing all of this. In the meantime now, as long as we're on the topic of transaction, so and buying a property for a down payment, and we quoted a braisa, so it affords the Gemara the opportunity to discuss this in just a little bit more detail, and we do that right now. Amar mar, mehecha magbia mina idis. So now, remember the braisa dealt with the following scenario. I bought a property for 1,000 zuz, I put down 200 zuz, and now somebody wants to retract, either buyer or seller. So let's say the buyer wants to retract, so the seller says to him, no, let me do it the other way. The seller wants to retract, so now the buyer says to him, wait 1 second, I gave you 200 zuz, so I'm going to take now land equivalent to my 200 zuz, and I'm taking the best of the land. So the Gemara says, Kasakadacha me'idis d'nechasav. Now, the Gemara telegraphs the punch. We think right now it just means the best of whatever properties the seller has on his hand. V'lo yehela b'chof. So the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. Remember what we learned back in Gittin. When you have an outstanding obligation against somebody, and it's debt, and you now want to collect, and he doesn't have the money, and now you're going to foreclose on a property, you can foreclose, but you can only foreclose on Beinonis, on mid-grade property. Not the it's not the best.
Why is it foreclosure, though?
Because
because the guy reneged on the deal, but he's not foreclosing. It's like he could have said that I purchased this piece of this land.
Well, right now what we think is that his ability to collect is from any of his properties. So right now, that's why...
Is he trying to get his money back, or is he saying, give me the land that I'm entitled to for the money that I get?
When the Gemara clarifies the point over here, you'll see that your question is going to be answered. So the Gemara says, V'tanam b'chov dina b'beinonis, v'od, ha'ar di'ayv zuzay. And on top of that, the Gemara says, I don't understand. 200 zuz is owed to this person, so give him 200 zuz. Meaning, he doesn't have to take property. Money could be satisfactory as well. What gives him the right to take A, the best property, and B, property altogether? Just let the seller who's reneging just give him money. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Meidah Sheba Umizubor Sheba. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you where the misunderstanding came about. You thought that he can collect any property. That's not true. We're talking about within this particular sale of this particular property. So again, the property is 1,000 zuz, and what the buyer did is he put 200 zuz down. Now the seller wants to renege. of this property now, which is subject to the sale. So now the buyer says to the seller, well, look, you want to renege? That's unacceptable. I gave you 200 zuz already. Of this property, I'm now going to take the best portion of this property. So it is not a foreclosure. It's not that he's just simply coming and taking whatever property he wants. That's not true. Of this particular property, he's going to be able to take the choicest part of this property. The Gemara offers another suggestion, a super interesting suggestion, and that is that look, 1,000 zuz property being sold, that is a major transaction. The Gemara is saying it, I'm not saying it. It's a major transaction. And being such, so basically now we're looking at a person who is about to make a major purchase in his life. And he needs now 1,000 zuz cash. Now, for him to get that kind of money together, so he's got to start selling off some of his smaller properties and really, right, saving, selling. And in order to get that money together, so what he may end up having to do is sell some of his property on the cheap. And now he collected all of his money. Now, in this particular case, he didn't get 1,000 zuz. He only got 200. But basically, he's now turning to the seller and saying, now you're going to renege? Meaning, look at what all the effort I made in order to get my money, even selling some of my property on the cheap, and now you're going to renege? And the Gemara says, now we could put the seller under the umbrella of being a mazik. Now, between us, this is a strong extension of the idea of being a mazik. Meaning, we've gone through Baba Kama pretty recently. Right. Mazik is where I go over and I destroy your property. So, over here, I'm blaming you for the things that I needed to do in order to collect the money. It's a taina, it's a claim, but to call that a mazik, that is a... That's a big chiddush. And not only that, but the Gemara says, and it entitles you to collect the edith. Now we do know, Rashi reminds us, that when somebody is mazik you, so that entitles you to collect the edith, that entitles you to collect the best. Over here, using this argument, in order to hold the other person a mazik, that is a chiddush. And even Tosfos acknowledges it's the big chiddush. 1, 2, 3, 4. Fourth Tosfos down on the Amud. V'havelei mazik, Tosfos writes, lav dafka mazik. Like, in other words, let's not really broaden the definition of what a mazik is. Shareen shamim kafia nezik sheiziko shareen mashalim ela kafia mao shegibel. Look, you're not. He's not able to consider him a mazik for all 1,000 zuz, only for the 200 zuz that was actually given. Tosha says ela ksas dimahu la mazik litol chovam in eidus. It's a comparison to a mazik. We're not actually referring to him to a mazik. Only to the point where we're able to collect the idis, but it doesn't really mean that he's a mazik. Okay, either way. That is step one of the raisa. So, the seller reneged on the deal, the buyer is able to take 200 zuz, commensurate property, to the 200 zuz that he put down. He's able to collect from the idis. That was a little bit challenging. You can only collect from the bainanis. So the Ogamar offered two pshatim in terms of how to understand that. The next... That's the part where we're up to right now in the Gemara. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Amar Malam Dano, Social Yachsu, Ketze Kosev Lo, Ploni Ben Ploni, Vechule, Vechule. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, well, you know what? Avoid all problems. Write down in the contract, this is a down payment. The rest is an obligation. And that way, nobody can renege. To which the Gemara says, Taima de Kosev Lehachi. Halo Kosev Lehachi Lokani. So the Gemara says, really, that's interesting. So, in order to avoid all problems, write down in the contract that this is a down payment. And what's clear inferentially is that if you didn't write this down in the contract, then we don't view this as just a down payment. We view this as just simply a partial purchase. But the Gemara says, but we know otherwise that the halacha does recognize the idea of down payment. And even if not explicitly contracted, the halacha understands the concept of a down payment. Va'atanya, and the Gemara quotes a brisa. I know saying Rav and Lechaver of Amalo, imani chozabi ervanim achulach. Va'ala omer imani chozaba echbolacha ervonech. Nizkaimu atanaim divir Rabbi Yossi. So the brisa over here starts with the opinion of Rav Yossi. Let's say I want to purchase a property from you, and I give you an eravon, not money, but I basically give you something of value of mine. I give you my watch, right, as a deposit. good faith, as we would say here. So I gave you, but it's again, it's not a good faith deposit because it's not money. I'm just giving you an item of value. And I say to you, look, if I renege on the deal, you get to keep my watch. And he says, just 1 second. And he says to me, and you know what? You show me some love, I'll show you some love as well. If I renege on the deal, not only am I going to give you the watch back, but I'll even pay you on top of that for the value of the watch. Right? Ech bolucha. I'm gonna pay you double. What do we normally call this in halacha? We call that an asmachta. Very good. I knew what you were thinking. So the Gemara says, now this is Rav Yossi, consistent with his general viewpoint. Rav Yossi, and the Gemara interjects the brisa to remind us. Rav Yossi latamid amar asmachta kanya. So this is the opinion of Rav Yossi. Now remember, Rav Yossi is generally of the opinion that asmachta is kona. So, for our purposes, by the way, we are of the opinion that asmachta lo kanya. So, don't take me out of context. We can ignore the first part of the brisa because we don't paskin like Rav Yossi. But, okay. We're not reading the brisa for this first part. We're reading the brisa for the next part. Rav Yehuda Amar Da Yishik Yiknek Keneged Erev Ono. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that what you're allowed to do is acquire corresponding to the value of the item that was given. Meaning that the deposit item obviously has a value. And so basically now you can acquire commensurate to the value of the item. Amar Shimon Gamlo Bamed Ramar Bizmansha Amar Lo Ervani Yukon. So, when is that true, says Rav Shimon Gamliel? When you make the statement of, my deposit will stand in place of the money to pay for the property. And obviously, whatever you gave is not going to be commensurate to the property. But Rav Shimon Gamliel says that if you're buying 1,000 zuz property and you put down 500 zuz, so it's not a deposit, meaning it's not an eravon, it's not an item of value. It's money, and I'm giving not all of it, but I'm putting down a down payment. So now you have acquired the property. The balance is an obligation. It's an outstanding obligation, but you acquired the entire property. Now here in this brisa, we just learned Lefi Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel that you acquire an entire property by putting down the down payment. And in this brisa, there is no need to write down in the contract this serves as a down payment. The rest is going to be obligated to you. And so it's pretty clear from this brisa that when you pay for property and you put down a down payment, you acquire everything. And this obviously is difficult because we just learned a brisa ago that you have to write that down in the contract. So lo kasha, so the Gemara says, so here the Gemara says we're going to make the following distinction. And it goes like this. Now, these Gemaras are always a little bit challenging because basically we're going to have to become now body language doctors. And we're going to have to diagnose the transaction based on the way he's behaving after the sale. I know it's a strange way to how to analyze and diagnose a transaction, but basically it's going to go like this. I give him 500 zuz for the property. Okay, and as far as the other 500 is concerned, so the it's a balance. So do we have to write it down in the contract, or is it understood? So the Gemara says, well, it depends whether or not he's running after you for the balance. And Rashi explains. I'm reading Rashi. So in the scenario where we say that it was not contractually agreed that this is a down payment, and it gives him the right to retract, the seller's running after the buyer for that balance. What does that indicate? Rashi explains. Gali daite dezuzi ansuhu. What it shows now is that since he's running after the balance, the truth of the matter is that this sale was really a sale that he didn't want to do. But the money forced him to do it. So if the money forced him to do it, so the sale will... we're talking now about the balance. We're not talking about the part that they actually paid for. So since the money forced them to sell, so therefore the remainder of the sale is only going to be contingent on the balance. So therefore, dezuzi ansu limkor the kevin de lo yayiv zuzi b'shas dachko adai de da'achi lo zavin lei. And since I needed the money, And since I'm not getting the money on the balance, it's only the money that forced me to sell. I didn't receive the money. I'm not selling you the second half of the property until I get the money. Ma she'ein kein, if you see that the seller is relaxed and is patiently waiting for his balance to come to him, under those circumstances, so then we view the first part of the payment as a down payment. Gemara says that's the distinction between within Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The Amarava, and the Gemara says, and this supports the halacha said over by Rava. You sell something to your friend, and then you don't pay for it in full, you pay partial, and then the other person's coming in and trying to get that balance out of you, and he's desperate to get that balance out of you. Lo kani. So the kinyan on the remainder is not a kinyan until you pay for it. And again, for the same svara we just said. So lo ka'ayel v'nafik azuzeh. However, if let's say the seller is not running after you for that balance, so then you know that it was a down payment and you acquired the entire thing. Kane yurukone. Okay, so this distinction that we just made within Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is consistent with a halachic ruling that came out from Rava. V'ama Rava. Another halacha that comes from Rava, and that's the following. If let's say I lend somebody $100, and he pays me back every day a dollar, and so for the next 100 days, I get paid back in the form of a single dollar a day. So, obviously, the borrower can say that he paid you back, but you, the lender, can say to the borrower some choice words. So we don't have to imagine what those choice words are. The Gemara is going to tell us. Ella de isle taramus gabe. The lender has a legitimate taina against the borrower. Again, not a financial taina, but taramus. In other words, he can call up the Better of Business Bureau, the Business Bureau, and say, "Not good. The way he paid me back." Damarle avsidata minai. You caused me a loss. What does that mean? You caused me a loss. So the the Gemara does not spell it out, but basically, I'll call this the snack machine dilemma. When you receive back a dollar every day for the next 100 days, so you know what happens to a dollar, right? The snack machine there, right? A guy collecting over there, and somehow, even though he paid you back, somehow. You never felt like you got paid back. Okay. How gavra dezavan lechamra lechavre? Person sells a donkey to his friend. Chamra can sometimes mean donkey, sometimes it means wine. Rashi over here insists we're talking about a donkey. Okay. So upash lechazuze, and so he paid for the donkey entirely except for $1. So in other words, so he put a significant down payment on the donkey. We would call this mostly paid, but not all of it. However, he is desperate for that last dollar. And so now, basically, can we refer to this the same halacha that we said previously? That because he didn't pay in full, and because it was only a down payment that was given, now again, our usage of the word down payment doesn't really fit this particular scenario. He paid for almost all of it. But Can we view the fact that the seller is now running and hunting down the buyer to get back that last dollar, that last zuz, can we now effectively use the rules that we just learned of down payment? So Yosef Ravashi Vikamaim Beiki I Gavna Mai Kani Alokani, and Ravashi asked exactly that question. And Amarle Rav Mordechai Ravashi Hachi Amar Avimi Magrinim Mishmei the Rav Zuzay. I'm sorry, Zuza Ki Zuzay Dami. In terms of the halachas of down payment, one zuz is like many zuzim. If you didn't pay for the item in full, and you only made a partial payment, and it doesn't matter what kind of partial we're talking about, even if there's one zuz left on the balance, that is considered now a partial payment, and the halachas are that if the seller is running after that last zuz, so then the sale is not finalized. And the Gemara says, "V'lo kani," and therefore the kinyan has not been made. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know, I do know that in other areas in halacha, Rava said you are kone even though you didn't pay in full. So I'm related to Tagem Shemay Techaba Mocher Sadeu Mibnei Ra'asa. So the Gemara says, well, maybe that statement to Rava that a down payment is going to result in a kinyan is going to be talking about a case where you sold land Mibnei Ra'asa. It was not a land that he loved. Rashi. Even if he weren't desperate for money, he still would have sold the property. He didn't love this property. The fact that he's hunting you down for the balance of the sale, it's because he wants to make sure that the sale is finalized. But the truth of the matter is, he didn't love this property. Now, quite frankly, we can all ask the question, how do you know when a person doesn't love the property? In other words, he is running after you for the balance. What telltale sign is indicating that he didn't love this property, he would have sold it anyway? So it's a fair question to ask. Perhaps the next story will be somewhat revelatory on this issue. Pshita. So the Gemara says, let's consider the following scenario. Let's say he so desperately wanted to sell a small property, 100 zuz property. However, he could not find a buyer. No buyer wanted to buy a property that small. And so therefore, what he was forced to do is zavim b'masayim. So he sold the property for 200. But clearly now, his history indicates that he didn't want to sell this property. He wanted to sell the 100 zuz property, but nobody was biting. So therefore, it forced him to sell the 200 zuz property. So here's a good illustration of, I didn't want to sell this property. And now, when the buyer bought it, he didn't pay in full. He only paid for a down payment. And now he's running after the buyer in order to collect the balance. So here's a good illustration of, the sale is not a finalized sale. Lo kani. Fine. Ella. So, but let's say now he's looking to first sell off the 100 zuz property. But the truth of the matter is, he didn't work that hard. And had he advertised, marketed, looked hard, then he would have found a buyer. He just didn't look that hard. And vizavim b'masayim. And then he's like, you know what? I'll sell my 200 zuz property. So the Gemara says, is that going to be enough evidence that he didn't really care for this property? In other words, he could have sold the 100 zuz property. He chose not to. He could have found a buyer. And then he went to the 200 zuz property. Can we say that he was not in love with this property? Take what the Gemara says, I don't know. I don't know if we have enough evidence over here. At least we get to see some evidence of somebody who doesn't love his property and therefore sells it. And then the argument can be made that even though the buyer only paid a down payment, but nevertheless he acquires the rest. Okay. And finishing up the entire discussion, remember, on time-sensitive issues, like a wedding, like a funeral, and you hire people to play the wedding, to play at the funeral, so for time-sensitive issues, if the workers, let's say, in the middle, back out, so now you can either hire somebody else for a lot, or you can deceive the workers, offering them more, and meanwhile not paying them. So, ad kama socher aleihem. So in the Mishnah, we get the impression that you can pay another worker a lot of money, and then whatever you paid the second worker, charge the first worker. So I'm Rav Nachman, ad kidei scharan. So Rav Nachman says, no, your budget to hire the second workers is only going to be up to what you were ready to pay the first workers. Now the simple pshat over here is that, in other words, you could take the full bill of what you are going to pay the first workers, including the work they already done, and use that to pay the second workers, and totally deduct that from the first workers. That's a simple pshat. Although, to be fair, I'm not going to do this right now, but to be fair, go through Rashi, and Rashi does not seem to give exactly that pshat. Okay. Eitzrei Rav L'Rav Nachman Ar Abraham V'chamishim Zuz. Now the Gemara says, now remember, we learned the Braisa just a day ago. And the Braisa says that you could pay 40 to 50 Zuz in addition to that which you've already paid. Which sounds like you have a much wider berth of what you can pay on time-sensitive work. So Amaleki Tanya Ish about the Chavila Liado. So the Gemara says, no, that Braisa was talking about the following scenario. comes the contractor, comes into your house, starts the job on a time-sensitive issue, and then says, you know what, I'm gone. So now he left his tools in your house. He left his toolbox. So under those circumstances, so now what you could do is you can take his tools, take his toolbox, right? Sell them, right? Use them to hire the next workers. So that's what the Braisa was saying. You can go up to 40, 50 zuz. Masha Ein Kein in the Mishnah, when you don't have his property, his tools, and you're just now looking to hire other workers, so you can only go up to whatever you were ready to pay the first workers.
Is it the fact that he left his tools in your property, doesn't that make you like a shomer in a way? So what's your relation with the guy?
Yeah, it's a big chiddush, and I'm saying over the simple pshat of the Gemara, meaning I know what the way I'm presenting it is fair and correct. But yes, it's a tremendous chiddush that you can just simply tap into his property and you know, in order to hire the next workers. But as a penalty for the fact that he was contracted to do the job, he didn't do it. It's a time sensitive matter. But yes, I think you're right. It's a big chiddush. Okay, we start the next mission. We are on Ein Chesem and Aleph. Hasochis Achamor Laolicha Bahar Vaolicha Bebeka. Bebeka Vaolicha Bahar Afilu Zasa Milim Vizasa Milim and Mesa Chayev. So halacha number one in the Mishnah is you're renting an animal. You agreed to go one path on the mountain, and then, contrary to your contracted agreement, you go through the valley, so, or the opposite, and the animal dies, and even though the distance is the same, you're going to be liable because you breached contract in terms of how you were going to take the animal from point A to point B. Second halacha of the Mishnah. So in the second case of the Mishnah, same starting point. You rented an animal to go through the mountain, and you instead went through the valley. Im hechlika pater. Now, if the animal slips and falls, you're going to be exempt. Im huch machayev. Now, the valley is hot, much hotter than the mountain. Mountain air is cool, valley is hot. If the animal overheated and died, so clearly now you took a path that caused the death to the animal, therefore you're going to be obligated. Now, obviously, we have a problem. In the first case in the Mishnah, we made no such distinction. In the first case in the Mishnah, once you deviated from the accepted path that you agreed about you were going to go on, so then you're going to be chayiv. In the second case in the Mishnah, we are now looking at cause of death, and therefore, if we are making distinctions whether or not the path that you chose caused the death. Shouldn't the deviation from the contract immediately make you obligated? And what's the difference between the first case of the Mishnah and the second case of the Mishnah? As you can imagine, that presents a problem, and that's the first thing we're going to tackle when we start with the Gemara. We're just going to read the Mishnah and finish the Mishnah. Laolicha bebeka vaolicha bahar. Within the second case of the Mishnah, we're just doing the same thing, but the opposite. You agree you're going to go to the valley, and instead you went on the mountain. Imechlika chayev. If it slipped because of the incline, so that's it. Now you're liable. In other words, that's because you chose a mountain. Vimuch ma pater. But if it overheated and died, well, if it overheated and died in the valley, it certainly would have overheated and died in the mountain as well. The mountain air is cooler. So therefore, if it died as a result of the thin air of the mountain, you're going to be chayev. Three. Hasocher is the third part of the Mishnah. Hasocher is a chamor vihivrika oshanasa angarya. Let's say you hired a donkey, and the donkey got blind. And the owner of the donkey says, look, I'm really sorry, but you know what? Those are the brakes. And not only are those the brakes, but that's your mazel. Look, you hired the donkey. He's still good. I understand. Seeing is an issue, but still got four legs, still can carry. He's still basically good. She's good to go. And you're going to still owe me the rental. It's an interesting halacha. We're going to talk more about that in the Gemara. Onasa Sangaria, or let's say, right now, the king commandeered the animal for the time being. So you say to the renter, look, you rented the animal. Right now, animal is temporarily unavailable, but having nothing to do with me. The king took it from me. I had no control over that. The fact that you're going to have to wait now for the donkey, that's your tough luck, and that's your mazel. And the rental agreement has not been breached, and the owner could still demand the rent. Amar lo ha'rei shecha lefanecha. Meiser Nishbra, Chayv La'amid Lo Chamor. However, if let's say the animal died, and the renter's like, okay, I rented a donkey, right? The dead donkey doesn't do much for me. So now the owner is going to have to provide another donkey. Okay, as per the rental agreement. Okay, so the third part of the Mishnah for our purposes right now, we leave out of the discussion. We're going to come back to that later. What we're going to tackle right now is, what's the difference between Section 1 and Section 2 of the Mishnah? Section 1 of the Mishnah, you take a course for the donkey that was not contractually agreed upon, so you're going to be liable, period. Section 2 of the Mishnah, well, let's analyze what was cause of death. And if the cause of death had to do with your new path that you chose, you're going to be liable. Otherwise, you're going to be exempt. What? You deviated. So, Maishna Resha Delo Kamaflik, or Maishna Sefer De Kamaflik. So the question presents itself nice and simple. What's the difference? We need answers. Gemara is going to give four. Answer number one. Ami Debe Raviana Resha Shemesa Machmas Avir. So, in the first case of the Mishnah, the animal died as a result of the air. Now, De Amrinan. Now, again, how do we know that? I guess it... The
whole thing of the pit, falling in the pit 10 times more.
Exactly. We tackled this topic before. I guess there is an empirical way to know that the animal died as a result of the air. But the Reisha Shemesa Machmas Avir, the Amrina Avir, the Har Katla, the Amrina Avir, the Bika Katla. And here you can make an argument that the thin air killed him, the dense, thick, humid air of the valley killed him. So in other words, under those circumstances, therefore we are, in the first case of the Mishnah, we don't stand to make chilukim. However, in the second case of the Mishnah, where the animal slipped and fell, the animal overheated, and we're going to have to make some sort of distinction between overheating and thin air, but whatever. In other words, but in the second case of the Mishnah, the animal died, clearly not because of the air, but because of something else, so then we can make distinctions. That's answer number one. Answer number two. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Kigo, Shemesa Machmas Uvtzina. The animal died as a result of exhaustion. In case number one, if the animal dies as a result of exhaustion, so now we could blame that on the deviation. In other words, animal was ready to go over the mountain. The valley exhausted the animal, or the opposite could be true as well. So then, under those circumstances, so no distinction to be made. Rav Amar Kigon Sheikisha Nachash. Rav is of the opinion that the animal was bitten by a snake. Snake bitten. And under those circumstances, again, you could argue onus over here, but the Gemara says, but in the first case of the Mishnah, so we can blame that on the deviation. Okay, and finally, answer number four: Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Amar, Rabbi Yochanan Hamani, Rabbi Meir, Damar Kol Amavir, Al Dash Abalabayis, Nikra Gazlan. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that anyone who is, in other words, I'm sorry, the first case of the Mishnah does not make any distinction; just deviation makes you liable. Second case of the Mishnah, we're making distinctions. So now what we're saying is, as our fourth approach, is that the first case of the Mishnah represents the Tana of Rabbi Meir, who's of the opinion that any time that you make a change, you are now referred to as a gazlan. So in the first case of the Mishnah, you now fall under the category of gazlan. And once you're a gazlan, you're chayiv under all circumstances. You have full liability. Even ones, you're going to be chayiv. Masha Enke, in the second case of the Mishnah, that moves us from the shita of Rabbi Meir to the shita of the Chachamim. Yes, it would have been neater had the Mishnah said, Zu divrei Rabbi Meir, v'chachamim omrim. And admittedly, that's true, but that's why we need the Gemara. Meaning, without the Gemara in this fourth approach, we wouldn't have seen this as a machlokas. So the Gemara says, "Hi, Rabbi Meir." So the Gemara says, "Good." So now we know that the Mishnah, first part of the Mishnah, subscribed to the viewpoint of Rabbi Meir, but we're only left asking a really simple question. Where in Shas do we see that, according to Rabbi Meir, once you deviate from the instructions, you're considered a gazlan? So the Gemara says, Elam Rabbi Meir did Sava did not. So the Gemara says, what about the Mishnah we saw towards the end of Baba Kama? Which is, I know it's in Semelot Sava Litzvoa, Lo Adam Vitzava Shachor. So you give the wool to the dyer to dye, and your instructions are red and he dyes it black. Your instructions were black and he dyed it red. So Shachor Vitzava Adam. Rabbi Meir Omer Nosin Lo Demate Simro. So Rabbi Meir says, at that point in time now, the dyer is a thief. Okay? And now he has acquired the item. because, well, we think, this is what we think right now, because he deviated from your instruction. And as a result of him deviating from your instruction, he's now considered a thief. He's acquired it. So what does he have to do? Reimburse you. Well, what did you give him? Wool. Undyed wool. What is he going to have to pay you back? Undyed wool. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Meshevach Yosei Ala Yitzia, Nosein Lo Yosei Yitzia, V'yimitzia, Yitzia Lo Shevach, Nosein Lo Yosei Shevach. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, no, he's not a thief. He just... He didn't follow instruction good. But he's not... Let's not call him a thief. He's going to have to pay you back. Now, he put in... he put dye into the wool, which obviously cost him money, and also he improved its value. Undyed wool versus dyed wool. What do you have to pay him? The lesser of the two. And this goes back to what we learned back in our Mishnah. He deviated, you're in the driver's seat, so you're going to pay him the lesser of those two values. But in the meantime, however, that's Shita's Rav Yehuda. But right now, for our purposes right now, we want to focus on the Shita of Rav Meir. Rav Meir called him. Now, Rav Meir didn't use the word thief. Rav Meir just simply says he needs to pay undyed wool. We're assuming it's because he deviated and therefore he's a thief. So the Gemara says, Doma Shani Hasam, Dekanya Bishino Emaisa. So the Gemara says, well, you're right. We know the conclusion, but the reason may be different, slightly different. And that is, it's not because he deviated, therefore he's a thief. You know what? He made a kinyan. We know what's called shinui maisa. When you take something that belongs to somebody else and you change it, yes. So it's yours. Now, granted, by the way, you're a thief for doing that, but it's not because you deviated from his instructions. It's simply because of the empirical reason that you made a change in his item. Therefore, you're a kona. So that's why you're paying back the value of the wool, not because you deviated, just simply because you made a shinui.
You would have made a change anyway.
Right, but what he asked you to do was that's exactly why. Meaning, very. That's why the Gemara thought as a Havamina that his reason of acquiring is because of the Shinui. But what the Gemara says is that, but we can give a simpler and more empirical reason why he acquired it simply because of the Shinui. Elaha Rabbi Meir. Okay, so we'll pause over here. We did really good in terms of almost catching up. We'll pause over here. So we're for the rest of the, not the rest of the daf, but for a good part of this amud now, we're just going to find the Rav Meir that talks about how once you deviate from instruction, you are considered a gazlan, which then would, in our fourth approach, then be the author of the resha of our Mishnah in terms of why, when you're a renter and you deviate from the instruction, so that immediately makes you liable under all circumstances. Okay? We finished the topic of discussion of employees backing out of their contracted agreement. The Rav says that by a contractor, so there is going to be a penalty. By a schir yom, there's not going to be a penalty. That may not be perfectly reflective of the opinion of Rav Dosa, but that is the halacha according to Rav. We talked about reneging on a transaction. We talked again today about a down payment and whether a down payment is going to make an acquisition on the rest. The Gemara made some distinctions in terms of when we can view the down payment as a purchase or when the down payment is only going to allow you to buy that which is commensurate to the down payment. And then we talked about rental agreement and deviating from rental agreements.